Well, right. Hi, everybody. Happy first Sunday of Advent. Today I want to tell you about Gaius. Gaius is a character on the TV show The Chosen, which is a story of the life and ministry of Jesus. And if you're not watching it, I really think you should. It is so good. But Gaius is a character on there. He is a soldier, as you can see. He's a Roman centurion. And where he served was a little place on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, a little town called Capernaum, and that's where he was stationed. And the people of Capernaum, they weren't fond of Gaius, because Gaius's job was to hurt them and extract money from them. Here's Gaius pulling his sword and threatening Jesus while he tries to call Matthew in there collecting taxes. Not a great guy. His job was to whip you and beat you, to throw you in jail, and sometimes it was his job to crucify you. Now, if there was ever a textbook example of a bad guy, of just simply a bad person, it would be Gaius. Like, that really does sound right to me. I've at times judged people for being bad people who have been much better people than Gaius ever was. But today we're going to look at Gaius' story a little bit, and it's going to teach us some things. The people in Capernaum and all over Judea, they had hope, even though this guy was there doing terrible things to them, killing them even. They had hope because God had given them a promise. The promise that he would someday send a king, a Messiah. Messiah just means king. In Greek, the word is Christ. God was going to send them a king. And when the king came, he was going to get rid of everything bad, everything evil that afflicts us. The king would come and get rid of it. So they always had hope. They always had hope. Like the song we just sang, I put all my hope in the truth of your promise. And that was what the people of Capernaum and Judea had. We're starting Advent today. It's the first Sunday of Advent. And at Advent, there's the Christmas side. There's the looking back to the coming of the Christ, of the Messiah in the baby Jesus. We look back. But actually in Advent, we actually look two directions at once. We look to the past, baby Jesus, and we also look to the future, that this promise of the Messiah is taking longer than they had expected. They thought it was all going to happen at once. But the day when God removes evil from all of us and sets us free from it completely and forever, that's still off in the future. It is something that we really, really hope for and wait for, because it's hard to have evil in your life. What I'd like you to do, we're going to make this practical right now. I'd like you to think of a name. Think of someone in your life right now. Someone who is maybe they're your Gaius. Like, you probably don't have a soldier that whips you and threatens you with death all the time. At least I hope you don't. If you do, come see me. There's a problem there. But I want you to think about somebody who makes your life harder. And maybe they even like to make your life harder. I've had people like that who are just malicious to me. Think of a name. The name in my head right now is Phyllis. Phyllis is an old friend who one day decided she wasn't my friend anymore. And beyond that, she started telling stories to people about me. And some of those stories weren't true. And they paint me in a bad light. And it's been going on for a long time. It is still going on. And it hurts me that she does this. I've tried to reach out to her and reconcile our relationship. She's just not interested. She just wants to make me look bad. And that frustrates me. Having a Gaius in your life is hard. It makes life hard. It makes it uncomfortable. It's just not nice. And while I try to love God and love others, without exception, She's one of those people who sometimes I'm tempted to make an exception in her case. I don't, loving her is hard for me to do. Instead, what I want to do is judge her. And to judge someone, it just means that you have two categories of people, that you have good people and bad people, and you put them in the bad people bucket. If you've ever judged anyone, it means that you're doing that. So I want you to think of anyone that you're tempted to judge. Or maybe you're not just tempted. Maybe you're just judging them all the time and you feel great about it. Judging feels great. So the thing that we hope for in Advent is God to remove the bad things, because the bad things are exhausting us. But there's a danger as we wait for that. It's possible for us to judge people. And Jesus, when he met Gaius, he treated him exactly the way he treated everyone else, kindness and compassion. And it made people furious. People were very excited that he was the Christ, that he was the Messiah. And he did things that only the Messiah can do. He was announcing the arrival of God's rule on our planet. But Gaius was still there. He wasn't getting rid of him. He was being nice to him. So some people, they doubted his message because of that, because of Gaius and those like him. I mean, and if you really think about it, you probably have thought this. If God is really in charge of the world right now, wouldn't there be fewer bad things happening? I think we've all thought that at some time or another. So when Jesus knew that people were doing that, he knew that people were doubting because Gaius was still there, because bad things were still happening. He told them a little story. It's called a parable. It's a story with a lesson. He gave them a story to explain how the kingdom of God, the rule of God here on earth, works differently than they expected it to. And it was largely about how he was allowing evil to exist, a situation that makes it very difficult for us. But he gives this parable to explain a little bit about why. And from that lesson, we are going to learn how to let go of judgment, because it's a super important thing. Judgment will poison your life, and it'll poison the people around you. And I've been working on that for a long time, and I've come a long way. I mean, I really have, and I'm very pleased about it. And I want to share some of those lessons with you today, and some ways that you can back off from judgment and stop poisoning your life. So we'll start in the story. This is in Matthew 13. The kingdom of heaven doesn't work the way you think it does. The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. So it's a farmer. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came and sowed seeds among the wheat. Sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. Pretty weird situation, but that's the deal. And when the weeds sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. Like, and for a while, they all looked the same, and then they started to look a little different. And the farmer's servants came to him and said, "Sir, didn't you sow good seed in the field?" You can see a little note of accusation. God, why did you put all these bad things in your world? Are you bad? "Where then did the weeds come from?" And the farmer replied, "An enemy did this." So there's a metaphor going on here, and we've probably all caught it, but I want to make sure you get it. This is a metaphor that God is a farmer, and the world is his field. And he has planted good seed in those fields, and those seeds are you and me. Every good thing on the planet, he is considering a stalk of wheat here, just a blade of grass, and one of them is you. There's many, many wheat plants sitting next to you today. But then the weeds, those are everything bad with the world. The things that God did not put there, they were not part of the plan. They were put there by someone who hates God and who hates you. And we can go down the Satan rabbit hole another time. But just know, evil exists in the world, and it's not supposed to. When someone mistreats you, it's really, really bad. It's evil. They're not supposed to do that. It's a thing that God hates, for people to mistreat one another, because it comes from an enemy. And the servants asked him, "Do you want us to go and pull the weeds?" I grew up partly on a farm, and we did that all the time, that if we saw a weed, we went and pulled it up, because weeds make life hard for the other plants around it. But he gives an unexpected answer. He says, no, just leave them. Instead, because while you are pulling the weeds, you will pull up the wheat also. Now, what's going on here is a thing that everyone in his original audience, they knew exactly what he was talking about. But for us, we need a little background. He was talking about a very particular weed. It wasn't the general word weed. It was a word that meant a very specific weed. And it's a weed that we call in our day Darnell. And everyone who has ever grown wheat knows everything about Darnell and how nasty it is. If you have Darnell in your wheat field, and you harvest it all, and you make flour out of it, someone who eats that bread, they could die. I mean, seriously. It's like if you have a tiny bit of Darnell in your flour, you can't sell it. But if you did, you would be in trouble. They wouldn't like that people being killed by the wheat that you gave them. So Darnell is a problem. And I want to tell you about how it works. Here's Darnell. If you know what wheat looks like, it looks a heck of a lot like that. And here is a field with wheat and Darnell in it mixed together in the spring. You have no idea. Here's what it looks like in the summertime. At this point, an expert could come and notice which one is which. Even today, you can get a master's degree in agriculture and make a career out of consulting with farmers, that they would hire you to come look at their field and tell you if you have a Darnell problem. Because even the farmers, the experienced people, they couldn't even do it. And this is about the time that the parable is going on, that the heads have started to appear, and the farmer, with his eye, he notices something's kind of hinky. Some of that wheat looks kind of weird. So an expert came in and said, "Yeah, you've got Darnell. You've got a lot of poison in your field. You don't just have wheat. You've got other nasty stuff. And it's almost impossible to tell the difference at this point. This is a real thing. This still happens." Now, in Jesus' day, there were people who wanted to pull the weeds. They looked at people like Gaius and the Roman soldiers, and really anybody who thought differently than they did. They saw them as weeds. They put themselves in the good person bucket, and a whole lot of other people they put into the bad person bucket. It wasn't just Gaius. And there were some people who even thought it was their spiritual duty to start a revolution and kill every foreigner on their land. Talk about servants who want to go pluck up the weeds, and they're just a little bit too eager to do it. So I want to tell you the main point of that image right there. The point is not one that you'll like to hear. It's going to sting a little bit, but it's true. You're a bad judge. You can't tell the difference between a good person and a bad person. You may think that you can. I think everybody in here thinks they're a pretty good judge of character, that we can spot a weed, that at least with someone really extreme like Gaius, I mean, he's a murderer. He kills people and beats people, and it's his job. They pay him to beat people up. He is the textbook example of a bad person. We think we can judge that kind of thing. But the point of this parable is, no, you can't. You are not good at what you think you are good at. And if you try, when people start revolutions where they try to kill all the bad people, that is a bad thing. Bad stuff happens, good stuff goes away. They just make things worse because they're trying to make those little exceptions to love God and love others. So I want you to think about your person, your Gaius. How much do you think you can label them a bad person? One of my ways of measuring myself is, if that person was on the side of the road and I knew it was safe to pick them up, would I pick them up? You know, if they were stranded, would I help them? If there's someone that the answer is no, that's an example of judging. The thing Jesus says to not do, the thing that'll poison you, just as bad as Darnell would. So I want you to think of even a bigger list. I'd say go home, write this down, think about it. Make a list of all the people that you've ever put in that bad person bucket. Anyone that you've ever judged as, this is a bad guy, and I don't need to love them quite in the same way that I love other people. Think of that list and ask yourself, did one of these ever surprise me? Did a bad person ever surprise you and come out, actually, you know what? I really didn't like them then. I think they're great now. For me, I remember a kid in third grade. He was in fourth grade. His name was Jason Kluge. He was rotten to me. He teased me constantly for being Jewish, which was odd because I wasn't. And our faith was a little bit odd to him. He was merciless. Like, he just liked making me feel bad. And you know, at the time, I was like, oh, rotten person. I looked him up on social media recently. He really seems like a great guy. I haven't talked to him yet. I think I might try. I don't know if he'd remember me or not. But he seems like he turned out pretty great. That's the thing that happens when you see someone that you're tempted to think of as bad, that they belong in that bad guy bucket. You don't know the whole story. There's tons that you don't know. And it's because of that that it's not your job to judge anyone, because you just can't. You won't be able to do it well. And you're not supposed to. It never will be your job to do. I'll move past that. So remember, when you're tempted to be judgmental, you're not a good judge. You're not good at it. You can't do it. So don't try. So moving on in the story, the farmer has a plan that plucking out all the bad stuff right now is not part of the plan. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. It's not the answer that you expect. If there's poison in your wheat field, you just leave them alone? Now, there's logic to this, but before we move forward, I want you to notice in this text, we're told what our job is. A wheat plant's job is to grow tall and produce fruit. In this case, the fruit is wheat grains. And wheat is a wonderful, productive plant. I'm glad that it exists. It has fed the world for a really long time. So what's your job? Your job is to grow and mature and bear fruit. Your job is to produce good things, love, joy, peace. And you provide that for everyone that you meet, regardless of who they are or what they've done or what you think about what they've done. Your job is to put love into the world because God has put love into you. So when you're tempted to be judgmental, just remember, your job is to grow. Your job is to pay attention to yourself and the things going wrong with you and making them better. Paying attention to other people and the ways that they fail to love is not productive. It's not going to do anything good. So don't. You want to focus on yourself. Look for the places in yourself where the weeds have taken root around you and they've started to entangle you in them. Look at the ways that you're a sick wheat plant. Think of it that way. And if you want to grow in that way, if you're serious about growing in that way, you are in a wonderful place. You are in exactly the right place. Because the church is the place where people who are growing and the people who want to grow all get together. So if you want to grow, join an open table group. Find somebody that you think is doing a good job at all of this, at being loving and joyful and peaceful. Find someone who seems like that and become their friend. Like I said, go to their open table group. It's probably the best thing you can do. Just spending time makes them rub off on you. Ask them to help you grow. Ask them to teach you how to pray or how to read the Bible and understand what's going on. And the Bible is a very old book, and that makes it difficult. But the people that you see that are growing, the Bible is a big part of the reason why they are. We even have Bibles in the back. If you don't have a Bible, go back and grab one and start reading it. And if you have a question, call up your person. Find a person who seems to be moving in the right direction and say, what am I supposed to think about this text right here? It's very, very weird. It helps to have somebody who knows what they're doing. And whenever you're tempted to judge someone, just remember those people who surprised you. Remember your Jason Kluges. Because when you know someone right now, you only know a little bit of their story. There's so much more. This is true, even in the case of Gaius, that when we first meet Gaius, he's a pretty unlikable character. He's mean. But over the course of the story, and I love how they do this and make him a complex character, you start to realize there's more to him than just the bully. You start to realize he has a family, and he is really concerned about taking care of them. That's why he has a job. He wants his family to be okay and be provided for. You learn later that one of his kids is actually very seriously ill, like that death is a possibility for his child. And you see him hurting about that. And over time, you see that Jesus starts to rub off on him. Just he has these little brief encounters once in a while. And you see him start to struggle with this conflict between his allegiance to the Roman Empire and his belief in the Roman Empire. He has a tension and conflict between loving that and also this other kind of empire that Jesus talks about. The empire called the kingdom of God that is ruled not by violence, but with love and patience. You see Gaius start to change. And the show isn't done yet. I'm really looking forward to what they have the future story for Gaius be. And that's the thing. Whenever you want to judge somebody, you do not know their whole story. Like, even if their life is over and they're dead, you still only see a tiny, tiny bit of their life. We cannot tell the difference between good people and bad people. And when the farmer says, let's let both of them grow together until the harvest, that doesn't seem right to us. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at that time, I'll tell the harvesters, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned, and then gather the wheat and bring it into my barn. Here's another thing that he knew about wheat and darnel that, you know, most of us probably didn't know. Here's wheat and darnel on the day that it needs to be harvested. There are some different looking plants in there, and right at harvest time, right at the day, you can see. Because when wheat finally matures, it's just full of goodness. The head with all the wheat grains in it becomes so heavy that they start to bow down. They bend over. And that's how you know when it's time to harvest. But darnel does not do that. Darnel just stands up straight, and even the heads start to look different so that anybody could see. So if you want to harvest this, what you do is quite simple. You walk through, you grab a handful of the tall things, and you slice them off very carefully, and you make sure the seeds aren't falling to the ground. And you get an armful of those, and you carefully carry them out of the field and dump them on the burning pile. That's what you do. And it's not hard to do, but it's only at the end of the story where it becomes possible to do that. And waiting for that day is hard. So it takes a lot of trust. When you're tempted to judge someone, get judgmental, trust the farmer. You are not in charge of the people around you. God is. Trust him to know what he's doing. That in this story, he really does know what he's doing. It's something every smart farmer of wheat knows about. And this is how they deal with it, even though it seems counterintuitive. Trust the farmer. You never know the ways that God is working with Gaius. You never know what God is up to with the person in front of you. And as you start to realize this, and you start to see it, you realize, you know what, Gaius was never God's enemy. Gaius was never a weed. That if I called that guy a weed, I would be wrong. I'm not capable of that judgment. You start to realize, and you start to see this parable differently. You start to realize, you know what? Because of Christ putting humanity into himself, it changes the whole game of being human. Every person on the planet, every human being is wheat. We are all people that God has planted here. We all have some problems. Some of us have made more progress than others. That's it. Everybody was put here by God to grow. And God is going to work with every single one of them because he's not willing to give up a single one. Why does he tell his servants to not go pluck the weeds? Because they don't know. If they try, they are going to destroy more wheat than darnel. And there would be no guarantee that they'd get all the darnel out. And he is not willing to lose one. He will not sacrifice a single person because he is committed to us in that way. Every person is wheat. And our struggles of good and evil, and we're all aware of them, and they're real. They really are real. Our enemy, the thing that we're struggling with, is not a person. It's never a person. The thing that we struggle with is evil itself. Paul, one of Jesus' friends who wrote a lot of things for the Bible, he said this really beautifully in his letter to the Ephesians, in Ephesians 6. He says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It's not against any human being. Instead, our struggle is against the powers of this dark world and the spiritual forces of evil. Again, we can go down the rabbit hole of Satan and all that some other time, but evil is real. And I want everybody here to know this, that evil is real and it makes life terrible. It made life terrible for the Jews in Capernaum. It made life terrible for Gaius. It makes life terrible for your Gaius, for Jason Kluge, for Phyllis. Evil affects us all, and it entangles us. It's another thing that darnel does. It reaches out its roots system, and you can't see it, but it reaches out and just winds itself around the roots of the wheat. And whenever you and I make mistakes, we fail to love. That's what's going on, that evil is starting to infect us and we getting us entangled with it. And God's task is very hard, to untangle you from the evil that has already snared you. And the way to do that is that, A, he works with you. If you ever get an urge to come to church, that's God, because he wants you to grow. He wants you to disentangle from the evil that has already gotten inside you, because evil is insidious, and it's everywhere. He works with us now to grow, to become better, and I love that he does. I love watching the story of a human being. Every single one is fascinating to watch. So that's really the last thing that I want us to know. When you're tempted to be judgmental, remember that evil itself is the weed. Martin Luther King once said a thing. He's like, yes, we want to be free from oppression, but we cannot become free from oppression without the oppressor. If someone's oppressing you, you are both being affected by evil. You are both being affected by oppression. That the person who's being mean, they're not the weed. They are just our wheat, just like you. So I'd like you to go home with, well, here's a little mental exercise. It's a visualization exercise that has worked for me, and I got it from this parable. All the people that you think of as bad, that you're tempted to judge and put in that bad guy bucket so you don't have to love them. Think of those people. Envision them in your mind. And get the visual in your mind that, you know what, they are a stalk of wheat, and I'm a stalk of wheat. Just picture yourself as plants growing together in God's field, because it's the true vision of people. Envision yourself that way. And then notice the weeds that surround all of you. Think of the ways that the weeds around you are affecting you. How evil has entangled you. And how it has entangled them as well. Because they're not weeds. They're wheat, just like you. So for me, having that vision in my head and pulling it in every time that I'm tempted to judge, you know, which is often. I'm better than I used to be, but I'm still making progress here. Bring into yourself that image of this person that I kind of despise them. And I know that it's not good that I despise them, but I do. Bringing in this image that you are both wheat, that you are both afflicted by evil, you are both entangled in evil, and that together you need a really good farmer who knows what he's doing. Here's the good news. The gospel. Jesus the Christ, the Messiah, he came once to us as a baby in a manger. But there's more to be done. God still has made that promise to remove evil from around us and from all of us. And this time of suffering that we're in will end. That's kind of cool. You and I were made to live forever, literally. And there's going to come a day when all of the things that hurt you, all the things that are bad with the world, all of the weeds, all of the evil that afflicts you and afflicts other people, it is all going to be ended, finally, because the harvest day will have come. That's Jesus' metaphor for that day. When God comes to harvest his people, to harvest the wheat and enjoy all of their fruit, and we will all enjoy the fruit together, that on that day, that stuff will end. That this phase of history where we're growing together alongside nasty things that we're calling weeds, but they're never people, that day we're going to get separated from them, and they're not going to be a problem for us anymore. One of the things I think about is being metal ore. It's another one of Jesus' metaphors that he uses elsewhere. And what you do with that, with metal ore, it's gold mixed with other things. You put it in a fire and you burn all the rest of that stuff off. I look forward to that happening for me. Because I got some weeds in here. I want them to go on that pile to be burned. I want it to get burned off. I know fire makes us think of hell. Don't think of that this way. I don't think this is what this is. It's the event that sets us free from the evil around us. And the coming of that day, the advent of that day, that is some of the best news you are ever going to hear. And it's true, so believe that. Well, as the worship band comes forward, I would like to talk about the presence of Christ. That Christ came 2,025 years ago, a little more than that actually. He came as a baby in a manger, and we are joining with our ancient brothers and sisters. We're all waiting for the coming of the Messiah. And in our day, we're waiting for Christmas, the day that we celebrate the coming of the Messiah. But we look forward. We look to our future in the same way that our ancient brothers and sisters in the faith did. We look forward to the coming of our King. He's letting us live side by side to give us time to untangle ourselves from evil. And he is with us doing that. But the day is coming, and we don't know the date. It's not our job to know the date. The farmer knows. When that day comes, we're going to be cleaned from all of that. And that is amazing news. That is something that I look forward to every day. And Christ has been present among us for over 2,025 years now. And he's present with us in different ways. One of the ways that he's present is in the bread and in the wine. So when we go forward for the Eucharist, we're going to take some bread in honor of Christ's body broken. And we're going to take some wine. We're going to dip it into the wine or the grape juice. And we're going to bring it into our bodies. And it's a way for us to acknowledge that God is with us. And even that God is in us, cleaning us up and growing us from the inside out. And it is amazing news. God says, Jesus says, whenever two or three come together, I'll be there with you. Whenever you come together to eat the bread and drink the cup, I'm there with you. God's here with you today. He's ready to train you in becoming even more amazing than you are. He put this church here just for that purpose. And we're excited to be here for you. Let's pray. God, thank you for your promise of sending a king for the world, because we don't have any good kings here. Thank you for sending us a king who knows how to free us from evil. Thank you for loving all of the wheat. Thank you for loving me, because you planted me here. Even on the days when I'm not doing so great. Help me to be like you. Help all of us, God, to be like you and love the people around us, regardless of how we feel about them and regardless of what they might do. Help us to love without exception. Bless us today, O God, with your presence. Amen. The tables are open. Come and taste the goodness of God.